AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
It's Power Hour, LSU.
Let's go. A big day for us LSU fans. We are only hours, it feels like, away from the final annual edition of LSU versus Florida. I don't believe they will be permanent opponents. I believe Florida's permanent opponents, when we get to the 9-game conference schedule, will be Georgia, will be Tennessee, and I don't believe LSU will make that cut. So this is the most visceral rivalry that we have, and we need all our weapons available. And Braylon Moore, hopefully he will be available. And look, his ankle, his lower extremities, I'm hearing good things, okay? Now, does he tough it out? Is it worth him even toughening it out? It would be different if you weren't able to have beaten Clemson a few weeks ago. But for me, I do feel better about Braylon Moore, considering last year the big reason why the LSU offense struggled versus Florida was because Paul Mbinga and DJ Chester had a tough game. So if you got to roll out Paul Mbinga and DJ Chester again versus Florida's defensive line, which is really good and has played mostly good up to this point, it depends on Caleb Banks' health as well. But the truth is, we probably need Braylon Moore to give us the absolute best chance of winning this game. So, as always, this is your escape from everything that is happening around the world. Obviously, two very sad shootings that happened today. Really, really, really sad stuff. And look, I hope I can be an escape. I don't want to, you know, get into everything that's happened. A lot of you have alerts on your phone. You've seen it yourself. But for me, I'm going to keep it football. I don't want to get into a political debate, but my prayers are for all those who were involved in everything that has happened today. And let's just hope we can all get along. Okay. Now, the nice thing, as far as LSU Florida is concerned, I feel as if, from my vantage point, that Florida at 9.5 was just too big of a point spread. That line has now moved down to Florida only down by 7.5. So for me, I do think there was a betting opportunity to go take the Gators. And for me, I still think this is going to be a close game. I have a tough time believing LSU is going to come out and just dominate them. And for the most part, LSU, they beat Clemson. Maybe Clemson's not really all that good. And then they took care of business versus Louisiana Tech. Florida offensively has not been terrible. They just haven't been able to finish drives. 3 is a really good receiver for them. 8, Ventrell Brown, has been really good for them. They just struggle in the red zone and in the extended red zone. So let's get to as many comments as we can today. I do also want to include that because of a scheduling situation, we were going to have a 247 national expert join us, and pretty interesting story about him. I was actually the first one to give him his first ever media job many moons ago. His name The next thing, and I do think this is important as far as LSU is concerned. I feel LSU will be the team that everyone has as their number one team in the SEC power rankings. I've seen that. I saw every team, I saw every SEC network expert say that Florida was way down on their list for SEC power rankings. And for us, our power ranking is number one. Every single SEC network personality has LSU number one. Could we legitimately say that based on what we saw this past weekend, LSU is the number one team in the SEC? I couldn't do it. So I've taken some blowback on this, that I moved LSU down. I thought LSU should have been the number one team in the country after week one, or Florida State, either one. Because of the week two performance, I did move LSU down some. If they beat Florida, that would obviously be two really solid Power Four wins. I know many would consider LSU to have beaten Florida and Clemson, two teams that are way under expectation up to this point in the season. Obviously, Clemson having their issues with Troy, and then Florida, of course, losing to South Florida. But I do think if LSU comes out and dominates this really good Florida team that really has their backs up against the wall, I do think you need to move Florida down and LSU up. And I do think LSU could be the bona fide number one team unless Georgia or Tennessee dominates one another. So, look, I know after week one, we felt the schedule for LSU for the rest of the season was going to be one that we feel very confident about, but who knows? Who knows? It's a very week-to-week thing up to this point. Now, a few other things. A shout-out Jason. A shout-out Tony, Calvin, and Alexander. Good to see each and every one of you. Okay? Now, I want to, let's see. Okay. All right, we are still live. Okay, my YouTube crashed on this side, but type Y for yes, type in for no if you can hear me loud and clear. Okay, the next thing. I don't think LSU fans realize how difficult Jaden Ball is going to be to stop. So we released our LSU versus Florida film study from earlier today, and you could see that Florida has some strong points on their team. Their center, Slaughter, is a really good player. The left tackle is a very good player. Number 13, Jaden Ball, is their best player. Okay, so if Jaden Ball is their best player, and we have not played a good running back yet up to this point in the season, that should concern you. Jaden Ball took us to the woodshed last year towards the end of that Florida game. We have to be ready to tackle him. He is very difficult to bring down. And if there is one thing that you could point to that Whit Weeks, Wes Weeks, and Harold Perkins struggle with, they can be a little erratic as tacklers. Okay? Jaden Ball might be the toughest running back for us to bring down all year long. If I were to rank them, I would probably put Le'Veon Moss of Texas A&M slightly ahead of Jaden Ball. I think Lenore Sellers is the toughest ball carrier for us to bring down, but he's a quarterback. But Ball is so, so, so damn good. If I were to rank the SEC running backs, I would have Caden Durham number one, Ball number two, Le'Veon Moss number three. Okay, there's some other good ones as well. 13 can flat out play. So What do we need to look out for? Well, the Florida offensive run game is very similar to our run game in that they like to run out of pistol. So when Jaden Ball is in pistol, he can get a good head of steam downhill, and we got to be ready. We got to seal those edges. And that's where a guy like Jack Pyburn becomes even bigger. He's on all the billboards around town. This is the single most important game he has played up to this point in his career. He's going up against his former team. As many of you know, Jack has become a friend of the channel. His father has become a really good friend of mine. And on top of that, Jack was on this channel. And he grew up wanting to be a Florida Gator. That's all he wanted to do. He has bled for that team. He has gotten hurt seriously for that team. He got his red shirt burned doing special teams his first year. So he has a lot of equity, sweat equity, built up into this Florida Gator program. And I will tell you, now that the game is finally here, Jack's split from Florida was emotional. Met with Billy Napier and also took it upon himself to really ask himself, is the Florida Gator program the best program for him to succeed? And the answer to that is no. They kept dropping him back into coverage, and he wanted to come somewhere where he can rush the passer and be a little bit more of an every down player. Okay. So Jack, of course, will always be better versus a run than versus a pass. It's just his body type, and it's also just who he is. There's not many defensive ends at LSU who has ever played here that's better or as good versus a run as him, right? Obviously, Tyson Jackson has to be number one, probably on that list. But he is such a good run-stuffing end, and he is going to be so big for us because a lot of Florida's runs stress you on the edges, whether it be outside zone, whether it be counter plays. That is where they like to attack. Now, this is where it's going to be interesting. Where I think LSU has a big advantage is their defensive ends versus their right tackle, number 53 or 58. You can check it out in our film study. He has had a tough year. I think that is where there is a major weakness on Florida's side of things, and I think LSU very well could dominate that matchup. Okay? Now, you go through the rest of this Florida team. You look at their receivers. All right? This is a good but not great group of receivers. Before we talk about the two that you really have to worry about, let's talk about the ones who have underperformed. 11, Aiden Mizell was a really good freshman prospect. He was a top 150 recruit. He's been in the programs a few years now. Really fast receiver. Just really hadn't done a whole lot. Then they brought in one of the more controversial receiver ads in the SEC, which was J. Michael Sturdivant, who started off his career at a very good program or at a very good pace at a bad program in Cal. Then he transfers to UCLA, and he actually played versus us last year and did nothing. Florida brings him in, hooks him up, and wants him to be a featured part of the offense. Had a huge drop last week versus South Florida in the third quarter, and he's not done a whole lot. And when you really break down his advanced metrics, they weren't really that good. And I'm glad LSU has stayed away. It would make a lot of sense to bring him in because he was Garrett Nussmeier's number one target in high school. He hadn't been that good, but he wears number nine. He's going to be very motivated to play Nuss again. But their two best receivers are 3 and 8. Ventrell Brown, who is a freshman, is good. He's just good. He's got a lot of juice. I will say, though, he had the drop that could have sealed the game last week. 3, Eugene Wilson overcoming an injury, more their slot guy. They're going to try and get him on Harold Perkins in some one-on-one situations and see what happens. Okay? Now, final thing. And I think this is big, very big. We get to DJ Lagway. How much of what has gone wrong at Florida has been Lagway? Well, the truth is, whether or not we want to admit it, and, you know, Preston Guy and I disagree on a lot of things. That's why I have him on the show quite a bit. But the one thing we do agree with is that stars matter. The star ranking matters. But sometimes those star rankings can overrate a player. And I do think Lagway's mediocre production last year as a true freshman overrated him going into this year. Because look, I watched most of his throws. I did my own statistical deep dive. I liked DJ Lagway coming out. I did think he was the number one quarterback prospect. But it was amazing how many sharp college football minds out there had him as the number one quarterback in the country. Not just in the SEC, in the country. Sharp people. I get a lot of things wrong myself. I do. But that shocked me. We had Andy Staples on before the season began. Go back and listen. Andy said the same thing. Andy is, to me, the sharpest college football personality out there. I would also say he's the best. Okay? And Staples was really high on DJ Lagway. Here's the thing. If you were to just watch the first half of the Ole Miss game last year, that was one of the best halves of quarterbacking I have seen from a true freshman ever. And there were some other good moments, including us. But our defense was ass. Downright ass. There's players that probably wouldn't start for UL right now that we were starting in that game. So he lit us up on one hamstring. It was really impressive. But I do think, watching him, he's not fully healthy. I'm not sure if he will ever be fully healthy. And that's a problem. Health is wealth. You've got to play through injuries. So, look, Lagway is really good. The talent is obviously there. If I were to bet who would be the number one overall pick, and not this draft, but the next, he would probably be my bet. That's how talented he is. But for me, I was just shocked at how many people overrated him going into the season. I do like the way that he plays quarterback, though. There is some nuss to his game, right? He wants to be that elite processor. He wants to throw with the anticipation. It's just really hard to do those things when you're that young in your career. Another thing about him that gets lost in the sauce here is that he's not really a runner. He's a good runner, but he's not a top five runner LSU will play at the QB position this year. Cade is a far better runner than Lagway. Obviously Sellers, obviously Taylen Green, who will play this year. Marcel Reed, who will play this year. Looks as if John Mateer is the best quarterback remaining on our schedule with how he's playing at Oklahoma right now. So Lagway, can he run some? Yes, but it's not really his game. So I do think him being the five-star and him being a true freshman player and him having a marquee victory last year over us and over Ole Miss kind of overvalued him. But both of those games were at home. Both of those games were wacky. And, you know, he was overvalued going into the season. That doesn't mean he's not going to light us up. That doesn't mean he doesn't have talent. But up to this point, it's been disappointing. I do think, though, the receivers for Florida have got to step up. They've got to help him out. Okay. We're going to actually, we don't need a guest for tomorrow. 247's Cooper Patania had to push back to tomorrow. Florida's tight end number 89 has played the most snaps on this offense, period. He's a good player. Had a big catch versus us before the Jaden Ball run. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Okay. Now, before we talk some Florida defense, I want to get to as many comments as we possibly can. Dylan Raiola. Okay, we'll talk about him a little bit later. Let's go to Team Hill. I just want him healthy. Only play him if he's healthy. Oh, for Braylon Moore. It's out of Jamie Calvin. Good to see you. Okay, now, I want to talk about a few things before we get to the Florida defense involving LSU, okay? So, my film studies can get misconstrued in many different ways. And whether I go on Blake's show, whether I went on a show in Mississippi, I obviously have strong takes about certain plays, certain teams, and that comes along with it. I want to be entertaining. I never want to be boring on here. I never do. Okay. But this was very interesting to me involving the LSU offense. I do think we have a major communication issue. I do think so. And I'm not just talking about the plays being brought into the players. That is also a problem, okay, because of all the false starts, first half timeouts, and so on, okay? So I think sometimes, not often, but sometimes, we have our players running plays that aren't the plays that they're supposed to be running. So yesterday, we did a 20-minute breakdown with Max Toscano on here about an outside zone run with Caleb Jackson where Tre'Davious Green was hurt. And the steps were all off. It just was not how that play was supposed to be repped. And Max was befuddled. He had not really evaluated that play. He is an outside zone expert. He is very well versed in how it's taught in most systems. And it's honestly pretty consistent. And I was wondering if the right play was being run by all the players who were on the field. And it's so key that when you're running any type of offense or any type of defense, you must be on the same page. You just have to be. It is so important. The level of concentration, the amount of plays that you run over the course of a game, it's okay if some players miss a play or two. But I do think it's a little bit more common, and this is speculation, I could be totally wrong about this. I do think it is somewhat common because sometimes some of the things that we do, in particular up front, don't make a lot of sense. So I would hammer home that, hey, when we call this play, this is what we are supposed to do. It is so important. Okay? It is so, so, so important. All right? Now, what's even more important, LA Mom is saying, hey, I'm watching, but I can't talk too much because I'm baking cookies. I love it. We should stop every broadcast to talk about baking cookies. Okay. Now, why do I bring all of that up? Well, let's talk about this Florida defense. We have got to be on the same page. So, 11, McCray isn't playing in the game. He's a very good player for them. We then get to 94, Tyreek Sapp. Probably their best all-around player. He's good. There's just no other way around it. How do you know he's good? Well, Jack Pyburn has been one of the best players on our team. He left because Tyreek Sapp is there. They play very similar positions. And Tyreek's going to play in the NFL a very long time. He's a very, very, very well-respected player. Okay? And we just couldn't handle him last year. 94 and 88, we had no answer. None. Zero, zip, zilch, nada. But where Florida has consistently not been great is their secondary. And if there was a game where LSU can get vertical, it would be this game. And here's the good thing about Florida's secondary is last week, the game-changing play was a bajillion-yard touchdown catch by number 11 of USF where two Florida defensive backs ran into each other. Now, some of that is because Florida has had different systems, different defensive back coaches. Obviously, Florida's corner coach is now our corner coach, and Corey Raymond, who's done a fantastic job this season. We need to get vertical. We should get vertical. So I do think we will be vertical and hit some vertical shots versus Florida. I'm not so sure we're going to be able to run on their front. And I would like to see a heavy dose of play action. Now, this is what I would do if I was in LSU's meeting room. Because this week, I've really took it upon myself to actually ask myself, hey, Carter, you have done a good job pointing out what's wrong. But life means nothing if you point out what's wrong without ever giving solutions. Anyone could point out what's wrong. Why do you think doctors make so much money? It's not because they can diagnose their problems. It's because they can solve them. And my job here is to be a problem solver. Now, it's really hard to be on this side and solve problems. It's not my job. Most of the money I make is just doing film reviews, not necessarily pointing out plays that I think would work. Now, I do think there is one thing we can do that I feel would be extremely productive versus Florida in this next week. And that's coming up right after this.
Power Hour Network listeners and viewers, you might be consuming this content with that crick in your back that you've been trying to get rid of for so long. Take this as your sign today to book your appointment with LaBoardTherapy.com. In the Lafayette region, there is no one that you will find that cares more about any different type of pain that you might have than the team at LaBoardTherapy.com. Book today. Once again, that's LaBoardTherapy.com, or you can visit one of their five locations all throughout the Lafayette region.
Alrighty, so one of my favorite things to do is when you run outside zone, is to play action out of it. If I'm Joe Sloan, first thing I'm doing is first play of the game, I'm getting in pistol. Florida's going to think it's OZ. And I'm just telling Garrett, hey, you know that throw to Barrion Brown last week? Don't do that. Do the opposite this time. And let's just chunk a shot down the field. Even if it's not there, chunk it up. That is one thing I would do. I would play action heavy out of that play. And another reason why that would be very effective is that Florida runs that play a lot at a pistol. Now, they're way better at it than us, but that's what they do. Okay, so we should do the same thing, except not do that thing and play action out of it. I would be heavy play action. And another thing I would say about LSU's offense that I feel would take them to the next step, it is a little too late to bring this in, but the way our offense is structured, it would have been a really nice, let's get Garrett under center type of year. Okay. It looks weird, but when I'm sad, I go watch Peyton Manning highlights. I'm serious. There's two athletes I go watch their highlights when I'm depressed. It's Peyton Manning with the Indianapolis Colts and Tyrann Mathieu at LSU. They always get me out of a funk. Okay. Now, I would say I tried to do that for the first time. I got high. I was like, okay, I don't like getting high. My mind is out of this world. I want some LA mom cookies. I remember I was in Vegas. I was laying down. I was like, hey, I know what would calm me down is watching Peyton Manning and Tyrann Mathieu highlights. And I watched them. I couldn't quit giggling because they were so good. I was like, why? How on earth did God create two football players that are so daggum good? And I just kept saying that to myself. I was like, these guys are so good. I giggled all night. But the truth is, if you watch enough Peyton Manning highlights, you're like, wow, this dude did everything just straight drop back under center. And it wasn't just that, but you get the point. I like being under center. I do. Okay, let's talk about hospital balls. I use that term too. Obviously, it was a big term in with the Saints because of the Derek Carr, Michael Thomas situation. Oh, what is a hospital ball? a hospital ball. What does that mean? So for those that don't know, a hospital ball is when a quarterback leaves a receiver out to dry, if you will, and throws it up in the air where there is a high likelihood of that player getting hit. I hate that. As if quarterbacking wasn't hard enough, we're worried about hospital balls, okay? Now, for Peyton or Tom Brady or Drew Brees, they're good enough that they can avoid hospital balls, but I do think that term is overused. I do also think, though, a quarterback, if he doesn't like a receiver, could do that, and that was the case with the Carr and Olave. Was there some hospital ballification going on there, okay? Poor Austin Collie. There you go. Now, what's Carvis is in the chat tonight? What's up, Carv? Let's go, bro. I'm going to switch this up. Let's get to, how about the black layout? There you go. That looks a little cleaner. Does it look a little cleaner with the black layout? I want to be sandwiched between greatness. Pause. Garrett and Mansoor Delane. Let's see. Let's take a few more before I go into my next little diatribe here. I'm all for getting vertical, but Sloan, for the love of God, please set it up with something first. You know, the truth is, Gib, Sloan actually set up his vertical shots well. It's just we didn't hit him. Garrett missed one, and then Berrion dropped the deep over. Could it have been a better throw? Yeah. LSU Hyper Ninja says, I believe Xavion will be a huge advantage for LSU this week. Yeah, look. Would I prefer Xavion to be used more or less in this LSU offense? You know, the thing about Xavion that I like a lot, and what I like a lot out of football players, is what all can you do for my offense to succeed? And the thing is, touches are a finite resource, but for wide receiver at LSU, an offense that struggles to run the football, there are more touches to go around with Garrett Nussmeier, who, when he drops back, does good at avoiding sacks and good at just getting the football out. So that's a good thing with Garrett as your quarterback. The problem is, and this is a big thing if you were to compare someone like Xavion and Chris. So Blake and I have gotten in two debates, one on my channel, one on his last night, about Xavion's usage and him being the X wide receiver, which is the number one option. That's the Jamar Chase role, right? That's the Randy Moss role, okay? So, you know, the thing is, when you compare someone like Xavion and you compare someone to like Chris Hilton, Chris is good, very good, at one thing, which is getting deep. And that skill set is the most valuable skill set, the most scarce skill set we have in football. There's not many field stretchers that are out there, okay? Chris is a true field stretcher. Xavion, not so much, right? Xavion just isn't that type of player. But Xavion's strengths are Chris's weakness. He's good after the catch. He's good in the football, with the football in his hands after the touch. He could play running back. He's a better blocker. So there's pros and cons to both of them. They both can also coexist at the same time. But I want to go to something, and I don't know if he's in the chat, but Player X brought this up at the end of last night's live stream, and I'll bring it up here again for those that did not tune in. What if there's Ewing theory at play? Which is, when a player gets hurt or misses time, does the offense or the team have a short jolt of improvement or enlightenment? And that might be the case here with Tre'Davious Green. You know, there are times where it feels like Tre'Davious Green is being forced the ball. And there are times where Tre'Davious Green has bailed us out, in particular in the red zone, where he becomes an infinitely more valuable asset. So now that Tre'Davious is out, maybe you can work in a few more players. But for me, what I want the wide receiver rotation to look like is Chris Hilton, Xavion Thomas, Aaron Anderson, and Berrion Brown, and Nick Anderson. That's it. I think those five were the five that I wanted to be in the wide receiver rotation before the season began. And we have got to do a better job of figuring out what the best for our offense actually is. So, you know, hopefully we could survive this game without Tre'Davious. I do think we're a better team with them. But we'll see what happens. I do think it'll be somewhat interesting with Barry Sharp as the full-time 11 personnel starting tight end. So his snap share will go up. That shouldn't be a problem for him. And maybe we see more Donovan Green, who is the more traditional tight end of the three. So Carvis agrees with me. Yeah, I just don't know. I just don't know if Kyle Parker is ready. I know we're in year three of Kyle Parker, and he could break out. I mean, I'm cheering for him. I've always been a Kyle Parker guy. But two drops in this last game. One that was difficult, a diving grab, that you should make. That is a catch you should make. And then the second one later in the game, every college football wide receiver should make it, much less one at LSU. And this is the thing about wide receiver play at LSU. I want my rotation to be tight because this is the highest level of wide receiver play you can have at the collegiate level. There is not a single player that has not once enjoyed watching highlights of an LSU wide receiver. The standard needs to be raised. We have got to quit the pre-snap penalties. We have got to get aligned properly. We have got to be on the same page. And we sure as hell can't have as many drops as we had in this past game. And this past game versus Louisiana Tech was a weird one in that there were quite a few of these. Could he have had the ball? Yes. Could the throw have been better? Yes. And did the defense make a good play on the ball? Yes. So there was quite a few of these types of reps where at least two of those three factors were involved. Xavion had a drop where the safety absolutely creamed him. He should have caught it. Aaron had a drop in the red zone that could have been caught. That was a tough play. Kyle had two drops. One was a tough one. One wasn't. Berrion had a drop on the Yankee concept on the deep over. Got to have it. But could the throw have been better? Absolutely. So this is unacceptable at LSU. It's unacceptable. I can live with our run game having issues because we knew going into the season that it probably was going to have some issues. But what cannot be tolerated is that at LSU, wide receiver play should never be a problem. Okay? Okay. Tiger Boy, RSX in the building. He sent me a photo of him at a bar watching some LSU football. Good to see you. I wish we were under center a little more. Yeah, a little more. Just period. Yeah, we haven't been under center really at all. Another thing about the LSU offense that needs to be eradicated, okay, is the 14 personnel. And it's got to be now that Tre'Davious isn't around. I'm not a big fan of the Bo Bordelon packages, as many of you know. It just has never worked. Okay. Now, I've already talked about a few defensive concerns I have versus Florida. Now, as we always do on Wednesday, we take a look at a few other things across college football. And to me, in the SEC, last week, there weren't a whole lot of good games. Okay, of course, you had the Florida upset. But to me, the big story, of course, was LSU. Outside of LSU and Louisiana Tech struggles, Oklahoma and Michigan, okay? But now we're getting into the meat where we actually have a lot of SEC on SEC action, okay? So let's go to the SEC matchups. I like to give you a few little leans. Alabama is still a 20.5-point favorite over Wisconsin. Oklahoma, 21.5-point favorites on the road versus Temple. That game being played at Temple. I've been very fortunate to know a few people at Temple. So, you know, I'm hoping the Owls, the Fighting John Chaneys, and if you don't know who John Chaney is, look him up. He's a legend. Not in football, though. I am cheering that Temple can keep it competitive. I've always liked Temple, but I think Oklahoma rolls. Auburn, South Alabama, 24.5-point favorites. South Alabama was a really good team that we crushed last year. Their two players hit the portal, Fluff Bothwell and South Alabama's quarterback Gio Lopez at North Carolina now. Does Auburn cover that, though? We know that Auburn, historically, has had some issues covering spreads versus these rent-a-wins. In-state rival, there's going to be a lot of South Alabama teams, but in-state opponent. Brambo, you live in Birmingham. South Alabama, can they get it done? We'll see. I think they cover. I think they make it interesting. Georgia and Tennessee, though, 3.5-point favorites, the Bulldogs versus the Vols. I think Tennessee finally gets it done. I feel the most square I have ever felt picking Tennessee to win this game. This just screams Georgia by 10 to 17 points. Georgia winning this in a typical Georgia-Tennessee way, like 27 to like 17 or something like that. But give me the Vols. Then we get down to Arky and Ole Miss. Arkansas probably has been the most dominant team through 2 weeks in the SEC. They have also had the softest two-week opening in SEC history. So they go on the road and play Ole Miss. Hogs, 7.5-point dogs. In a weird spot, because Arkansas has to go on the road again next week at Memphis, and then they welcome Notre Dame to Fayetteville. Very interesting. Give me Arkansas to cover. I do think that over-under is egregiously high, too. Egregiously high at 61.5. So I'm leaning under there as well. Unders have been very powerful up to this point. Notre Dame, 6.5-point favorites over Texas A&M. South Carolina, only 4.5-point favorites over Vanderbilt. That just screams South Carolina covering with these, which means you should hit the Vanderbilt money line. And I like Notre Dame taking care of business versus Texas A&M. Okay? So what do you guys think? Let me know. Let me know. We say hi to Tyler. What's up, man? Let's go to 904. Do. He says, put Carius Kern in at offensive guard. Says 904. Do. We released a short earlier today saying the same thing. Why no Carius Kern? I will say this. And this made no sense to me in so many different ways. But the one thing I never want to see a player do, is play one snap. Kerryus Kern played one snap versus Louisiana Tech. Why? Why? That makes no sense. It makes absolutely no sense. If you were going to play him, why not play him earlier? Okay? This would have been the perfect game versus Louisiana Tech to try Kerryus Kern somewhere. It was a game you knew you weren't going to lose. And a game where players were playing that you already knew what you had. So why not try the guy that generated the most buzz throughout camp of the offensive true freshman? Why not give him a chance? If you're already flirting with them, playing, okay? I would have been fine, totally fine, with him not playing at all if you didn't play him one measly snap. I don't know. It's weird. It was very weird. I don't know why. I'm sure Kerryus has already been told, hey, there is a high likelihood your red shirt will not be preserved because we need you. But that made no sense. That made no sense. You should never, ever, ever play a player who still has a redshirt year available one snap. It does no good for anyone involved. Alexander says, Kerryus Kern was the number one inside offensive lineman, and they keep trying to play him at tackle. Yeah, I know. It's weird. You know, I'm okay with trying him at tackle if you think he is good enough to play tackle, if he's comfortable enough to play tackle. But I don't know. I'm not the expert. Okay? Now, here's what we're going to do. Type Y for yes, type N for no. We will take as many questions as we possibly can in the next 5 to 10 minutes. If you super chat, we'll keep this thing moving. And on top of that, type Y for yes, type N for no. If you can hear me loud and clear, I changed a few things up on my audio settings. I'm trying to make this sound the absolute best. A lot of you have said you've enjoyed the headset more than the static microphone, I guess because I'm able to move around a little bit more and do all the stuff that I like to do with my hands, with these hands. I got my nurse jersey in today. Oh, man, I love it. I love a good Garrett Nussmeier jersey. Did you get the number 18 or the number 13? Ori Williams? Yeah, I guess it's just not going to work out. Ori Williams, Ethan Callaway. Why not try Ethan Callaway? I got this tweet here. Carter, I feel Tennessee gets it done as well. Now, oh, you got a Garrett Nussmeier number 5 uniform. You know what's funny? All my Garrett Nussmeier autos now have the number five signature. Like I love getting the earliest signatures. I got Odell's earliest signature, one of his earliest signatures. So yeah, I need to update my Garrett Nussmeier collection. Okay. This is interesting. So Alexander points out, did you see Berrien Brown and Nick Anderson were in the top five of NIL for receivers in the SEC? Aaron Anderson was at number 10. So yes, it is true that On3 released some NIL numbers, and Ryan Williams was at 1.8 million. The next was Casey Concepcion at 1 million. And I think Aaron was at like 325 and Berrien and Nick were at 500K or something like that. I don't know. Those numbers aren't official. You know, Garrett makes the same amount as Talen Green according to those same numbers. I do think transferring, you have to pay a little bit more just because a player is getting offers from everywhere else. And LSU was in a position where they needed to replace Kyren Lacy. So, you know, they got two receivers that play similar roles, and I understood why they did it. But, you know, with these NIL numbers, it's always tough to 1,000% confirm them. Okay. Now, I wanted to save the end for a player that I've never seen play before. In fact, when he played at LSU, I was not conceived. In fact, I was a decade away from being conceived, and that was Charles Alexander. And he is getting his name and number enshrined this next weekend in Tiger Stadium. I hate that I can't make it, because Charles has become a friend of the channel. He's become a friend of all of yours. He's been on the channel, I think, three separate times. And he's just a great all-around dude. Now, I'm not around him every day, but, man, I've gotten to know some of his family. I've gotten to know some people in his circle, some of which have asked me if I was coming to this weekend. But, you know, for me, I'm just happy someone from that era is being remembered, because the LSU modern era of college football just takes up so much oxygen, and rightfully so, right? LSU has been a top five program of the past 20 years. But there were so many great players before that era began. The Kev Falk years were what really kicked off this modern era of LSU football. And look, I am very happy that Charles is getting this honor, well-deserved honor. The Come On Man seasonings are good as well. So shout out to you, Charles. And if you want to listen to our interview with Charles from this past year when he got his number retired, feel free to check that out. Okay. Now, you know, one thing I feel is important in this day in sports media is for me to be as honest as I possibly can with each and every one of you with how I see things. I feel as if LSU is indeed still a very good team. I still think LSU is going to make the playoff. I still feel LSU is a 9-3-ish team. They can still make the playoff with that, by the way. But the goal is 10-2. You beat this Florida Gators team that's floundering, the chances of that go up. My dream for the season is LSU hosting a playoff game. And I hope that happens this year. I really do. I really, really, really do. Pegasus says, if USF beats Miami this week, should they be the number one team in the country next week? Yes. Yes. If you're wanting to be more of a resume-based voter, sure. Sure. If you want to live that way, then they would have to be number one. But are they truly the number one team in the country? No. Even if they beat Miami, no. Because I do think as rankers, you should factor in a little how good a team actually is. For me, I have LSU as my number 7 team in the AP poll and my number 3 power rated SEC team right now. So, you know, South Florida, I think I had at number 11 with room to move up. Yeah, Berrion's really good. I will also say Berrion worked his ass off. He really pushed this wide receiver room and showed great leadership. Joe Horn, Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. Did y'all see that? Todd McClure, LSU legend, named to the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. Pretty excited about that. Now, we will be live again tomorrow with Cooper Patena of 247 Sports. You're going to love it. We're going to talk to him about how players actually get ranked in the rankings. I'm sure a lot of you have questions about that. He does play a big role in those rankings, so he will be with us tomorrow night. We'll be live at 6. He'll join us at 6:30. And afterwards, Jaden Daniels plays football tomorrow as well. It is Power Hour LSU. Boom. Shout out again to our friends at Labor Therapy, Zion Imaging, and Fast Draft Fantasy. Tonight, we are doing taco soup. Let's go. Let's go.